Hello and welcome to Rigori, the Italian football podcast. I'm Marco and I'm joined by my cousin Giancarlo, who is relaxed at the moment because Fiorentina haven't played this weekend.
Yeah, it's been a great weekend. This, I could get used to this. I think Fiorentina should just give up playing football and I could be one of the most relaxed men in Scotland.
Well, as it happens, I think perhaps most of Serie A had that approach to the weekend because there weren't many victories, although there were some spectacular goals and some discussions that we can have. We're recording this as Inter are currently playing. They're beating Cagliari at the moment, so their long predicted march to the Scudetto, it seems to be going off without a hitch, and we were just discussing before we started recording that it could be next week in the derby that they wrap the whole thing up. But earlier today, Sassuolo, who have been not, you know, in serious trouble this season, had a bit of a ding-dong battle with Milan that ended up 3-3. They were 2-0 up at one point, though.
Yeah, no, it was a good game. It was an exciting game. I don't think it would probably not please either sets of supporters at the end of it. But, I think it would please Sassuolo fans in the attitude that their team showed. And Llorente certainly hitting a bit of form late in the season, a player that Fiorentina have been linked with. And, you know, in current form, I wouldn't mind if they did a deal for him. But, yeah, no, he got a couple of goals in that one. Pinamonti opening the score. And they got off to a flyer. And then Milan pulled their way back into it. They made a couple of changes. Obviously, Milan's got their big European tie with Roma that they're going to try to turn around, and, you know, Pioli again facing some criticism. He swapped round goalies and stuff, and it didn't look to work so well. But if you've got Rafa Leao, that can always solve a lot of problems. And the lesser spotted Luka Jovic getting in amongst the goals. So yeah, I mean, that was the most exciting because, as you say, it was a weekend of many draws, five draws in total as we stand anyway, as we record, and just a couple of victories. So yeah, that was a game where I don't think it'll have taken away the Pioli critics who were out in force after their midweek reverse to Roma. Will carry on because, you know, obviously to drop points to a team that's, you know, very much near the bottom end of the table wasn't great. And Sassuolo, having been two goals up and, you know, the 3-2 up as well, they had kind of glory was in their grasp. It was also, I'd seen, I don't know if you saw, I mean, what the tightest VAR offside I've ever seen in the history of VAR in terms of the picture didn't seem to show any side of him. This was Chukwueze.
Yeah.
Thought he'd scored for Milan, went away to celebrate, and then they showed the picture. And I mean, I don't know, maybe my eyesight's fading right enough as I get older, but I couldn't see any part of his anatomy that was offside.
Well, we go back to that whole thing about clear and obvious error and stuff, and it certainly wasn't that, put it that way. One of the few victories this weekend was Lecce beating Empoli, there was Empoli. It could have been another draw because Empoli actually scored a goal, but it was then disallowed for VAR. And again, a talking point from VAR.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I know that it's like it's not another. It's just, you know, I think when VAR starts rewinding games so far, I know it wasn't another period of play. But for anyone that didn't see it, Elia Caprile, the Empoli goalie, it looked like it was quite a windy day in Lecce, and he went to gather the ball in his box, and it obviously got a bit of a wind behind it. Anyway, he grabbed it, kept it in his box, or so he thought, and started a counter-attack, which went all the way up the pitch. Cherdi scored a nice goal, and, you know, that would have been a big boost. Empoli's on a good run of results, fighting for relegation, only to have it VAR checked for a possible handball 80 yards away from where the goal was scored. And, I mean, I guess, you know, it was still all the same action of play. And I suppose if the ball had gone out for a throw-in or whatever, you know, if there was the technology there, it just, if I was an Empoli fan, I'd have been particularly gutted because it was, I mean, I think Lecce probably on the balance of play were worth their win anyway. But, you know, just the same, it was how far do you rewind to spot an infringement, really? That was the talking point from that game, I thought.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it is a difficult one, isn't it? Because I suppose, yeah, you can see it from both fans' point of view, but even some Lecce fans would probably be, you know, very happy with the decision, but not necessarily have been arguing for it when the ball went in the net. But yeah, what can you do? But I mean, the only other thing probably to mention from the weekend was that Politano for Napoli scored another great goal following his. I mean, we praised Osimhen's header last week a lot, but he obviously Politano scored an absolute cracker last week. And did again this week. He's a funny player because he is capable of that sort of thing, and he is capable of, you know, tormenting a defender, beating them inside out and things like that. But for me, certainly when it comes to Italy and stuff, he's never quite been able to make that step up, really, when it counts.
No, and we've got Orsolini as well.
Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly the same role. I'd say, I mean, Orsolini a bit younger as well, so he's maybe got time, and he's taking his time to get. And he's in great form at the moment. I mean, he was a bit unlucky. I watched the highlights from the Bologna Monza game, which looked a lot more. I mean, there's 0-0 draws and there's 0-0 draws, but that looked a much more exciting one than the Turin derby, which, you know, normally would have been. Talking point for the pod was really quite tedious from the spells of play that I saw. But yeah, no, I mean, Politano scored a beauty. I actually saw something just from last week's pod. You were wondering whether Osimhen was anywhere near Ronaldo's header height. But apparently he was a couple of feet short of what Ronaldo reached. I saw a chart, which is just phenomenal, because it looked like he was flying. I think it was maybe the dynamic of, because he was sort of fouled in it, It did literally look like Osimhen was flying at
one
point.
True.
It was sort of in a horizontal Superman pose, whereas Ronaldo's leap, I think, was entirely vertical. And so that was, yeah, no, I saw a chart, as I say, and he was almost a couple of feet short, apparently, which is just breathtaking. But, I mean, Napoli, that game, again, summed up a lot of the problems that Napoli have got, because, you know, Frosinone are a decent side, and it must have sickened them a bit that usually your lone players can't play against you, but Wally Cheddars, as I call him, Walid Chedira, struck a couple of times against Napoli. And they also, Frosinone had a penalty saved as well. I mean, it was a calamitous error from Meret to gift one of the goals. But just that the centre of that Napoli defence just looks so kind of easily perforated. The only defence that can outdo it, I think, at the moment is Salernitana, who look like they've already started their summer holidays on the evidence of their game against Lazio, where they were just able to waltz through at will. But yeah, no, worrying for Napoli and Politano, yeah, a man that, you know, I think I don't mind him as a joker up the sleeve to come on. I wouldn't want to be building a national team round him, I don't think, but I wouldn't mind having him as a player to come on, because I think he can, or, you know, even an impact starter. I think he seems to be a man. I mean, certainly that was kind of his role a lot of the time for Napoli and for Inter and for everywhere else he's been, really, has been a sort of 60-minute man. They seem to not, and his face, he looks almost resigned to it as well as he comes off. It's like, you know, oh, that's an hour done, it must be my turn to come off, sort of thing. But capable of these great goals, and that, we've discussed this before, but Serie A does have a string of players of that ilk that, you know, maybe not consistent, but by God, they can score a worldie ever so often. And, you know, that, it just shows that Serie A has got some talent and quality that perhaps other outsiders might not fully recognise or appreciate.
Yeah, but they may appreciate it a bit more after the results in Europe this week. And obviously the big result, there was the Milan-Roma game, we'll get to that in a minute, but the big result was Atalanta winning 3-0. in Liverpool. And, you know, I suppose even Atalanta fans probably didn't think they'd walk away 3-0 winners, but there was a sort of attitude, as usual, of, you know, Atalanta were there to make up the numbers, Liverpool favourites for that competition were going to walk all over them. And really, they were... I mean, Liverpool had some chances, but Atalanta could have scored even more than three goals.
Definitely. I think there were a lot of hotel bookings in Dublin being cancelled in the latter part of the week. Could still be turned around, of course, but, you know, certainly...
Liverpool have won 5-0 in Bergamo before.
Yeah. So, you know, it isn't impossible. And, you know, I think, though, there were a number of elements in that. Liverpool, I thought, maybe took Atalanta a little lightly, or took they've prioritised the league, although that didn't go so well for them today either. But, you know, they did pick a team that was mildly under strength, I would suggest, and got caught out. And then even when they brought their big guns, in inverted commas, on, they had about 10 minutes of play, and then Atalanta got to grips with them, really, and you know, were relatively untroubled towards the end, which worry me. I mean, I've spoken to a few Liverpool fans, and, you know, to me, Darwin Nunes would drive me absolutely bonkers if I had him in my team, because they do... not so much in that game, but other games I've watched them, they create a lot of chances and he misses a lot of chances. I mean, he's a great endeavour, perhaps, but not a man that I would think should be leading the line for a team that's meant to be challenging for league titles. But, I mean, I'd rather dwell upon the power of Gasperini's reinvention of that team, really. I think just, you know, that's now maybe the third or fourth cycle he's going through with that side. Where, you know, you and I, even at the start of the season, thought, is this kind of end of an era? Has he burnt out? Can he not reinvent? And yet, here they are, you know, it could still well get to an Italian Cup final and look a good bet for progressing in Europe as well, and a very solid finish at the top end of Serie A. And he does it, you know, time and time again. He does it with, you know, relatively unfancied players, but playing on the front foot. I think that's the thing, is it wasn't a smash and grab on Thursday night at all. They were willing to go for it. They stood toe to toe with, you know, allegedly one of the greatest sides in Europe. And it did make me wonder, you know, Marco, where would Liverpool finish if they played in Serie A? What position?
Indeed, yeah, I mean, down maybe. I think they'd probably beat Salernitana.
I'll give them Salernitana, but, you know, everyone else, I think, you know, would, because, I mean, without sort of completely gloating, because obviously we could be left.
Oh no, this is the Rigori curse. They're good.
Yeah,
get your money on Atalanta.
Yeah, exactly. Fill your boots on that. But no, what I was going to say was, like, Fiorentina made Atalanta look very average in the Coppa Italia. So, you know, there are teams there that they don't have the resources. They don't have, but I do think that tactically there are managers there that are innovative.
Yeah,
that, you know, and especially Gasperini at Atalanta, is just, there's a bond there. I don't think, I heard James Horncastle saying he should be mentioned in the mix for the bigger jobs than Atalanta as well, which is true because his work deserves it. But at the same time, I think he's found his niche. I mean, I think, like, players find their level. He's found a place that gets him. He gets the place. And, you know, we've said it before, he's not necessarily the most likeable of guys, but he's a bloody good coach and he gets the best out of the teams that are there. And I don't know that, you know, he had his shot at Inter and it didn't work great. And, you know, I don't know why really we'd want to move, a bit like players as well. You know, sometimes I think, like Poyampalo at Venezia, why go anywhere else? I'm saying that to kind of butter you up and make you happy, really, Marco. But,
well,
you know,
you say that, but of course there's rumours this week about Lazio, but we're going to ignore
it. Well, I've seen so many players, so many coaches be kind of tempted away by the bright, like, say, Thiago Motta at Bologna, or Lewis Ferguson at Bologna as well. You know, they're going great. They're in a lovely city. They're getting paid well, not brilliantly, perhaps, but, you know, get people...
Relatively speaking.
Yeah, relatively, you know, and so there is a point where is that, you know, I mean, it's not quite the same thing because Gasperini is at the later stages of his managerial career, whereas Motta's on the up and Ferguson on the up. But, you know, but I do think there is a point there where, you know, be careful. Don't jump too soon because sometimes
in the case of Ferguson, does he really want to go to Juve or whatever and sit on the bench 90% of the time, which is probably what would happen? I know he'll think, I can force my way into the team, and great if he does, but, you know, it's that sort of thing that can happen to so many players when... I mean, I've seen it at Venezia. We've lost some good players over the years that have gone to bigger clubs, and then they don't even get a game, and then you never hear about them again.
Yeah, exactly.
If they had stayed, they would have been heroes there. So yeah, there definitely is that. But before we dip down in Serie B, I suppose we better also just quickly cover two other European games. There was the Italian derby, I suppose, in the same competition, which, you know, De Rossi continued his magic with Roma to get a victory there. Definitely not over that tie, but as you mentioned, Milan fans using it as an excuse to batter Pioli again.
A stick to beat Pioli with. I mean, in the end, it was 1-0. I mean, I get it that, you know, it's hard for Milan fans because Inter's going so well, and it's also hard because, you know, that there's now De Rossi is a up and coming manager with a vision of play, whereas Pioli is pretty tried and tested. It's not all that sexy to have Pioli in charge, but the tie's still open. You know, it's certainly every chance. I mean, it wasn't a good result for Milan, but, you know, there's every chance that they could turn it around, and then there'll be a bit of humble pie to be eaten. We should you know, send our best as well to Evan Ndika, the Roma defender. The game suspended, it appears he's going to be okay, which is great, but, you know, there was a moment of panic there in that game where he collapsed on Sunday evening there against Udinese, so, you know, that caused some upset to Roma. So, you know, that tie wide open. Not to bore listeners, but there was another tie played, which I would certainly put it somewhere in my top 10 or bottom 10 most dull European games ever watched. Victoria Pilsen, I mean, I don't know if there'll be what the chances of any Victoria Pilsen fans listening to the podcast are, but if that's how they play every week, I'm amazed anybody turns up at all. They've kept some ridiculous number of clean sheets in their European campaign, and you could see why, because they don't venture out their own half, and they even have, I mean, the ball boys are even trained to keep a hold of the ball extra time. So, I mean, in fair play, that's, you know, you use what weapons you have against, you know, presumably they see Fiorentina as a tough opponent, and that's fair enough. But it was so reminiscent, I tweeted about this, it was so reminiscent of the Rangers-Fiorentina ties back in 2008, maybe it was in the UEFA Cup, where it took Fiorentina a game and a half to work out that the opposition wasn't going to come out of its own half. You know, so again, frustrating because Fiorentina didn't really work that out. I think they worked it out a bit quicker, and they did go for it, and they did have some chances, and, you know, they'll fancy themselves to get through in Florence. But clearly, if you're defending the 0-0 at home, I can only think it's going to be more of the same. So, you know, normally I would say tune in, don't miss a Fiorentina European game, because you can usually guarantee 4-3, 6-5 or whatever. But with this game, unless there's an early goal, you know, Poulsen certainly would sign up. Their attitude was that they were aiming for penalties. Certainly, that was how it appeared. And it was just, you know, it was an hour and a half of my life that I won't get back again. And I love Fiorentina, but it was a terrible, terrible watch. And, you know, I couldn't recommend to anyone to watch another potentially 2 hours plus of that excruciating.
And also, it was a bad result for Scottish teams as well, because it was what the Czech teams needed to mean that they pushed Scotland down. So
yeah. Yeah, that's
Scotland
right.
No that, longer have an automatic place
that,
in the Champions
that
League.
That knocks them down. There's some jiggery-pokery dependent on who wins the league, apparently, because Rangers' performances in Europe although Rangers compromised their chances somewhat of winning the Scottish Premier by losing to Ross County, having celebrated their momentous draw with Celtic. So, it has more effect if Celtic win the league than it does if Rangers, apparently, because I think if Rangers were at their own points coefficient or whatever, would allow them into the Champions League new setup. Whereas if it's Celtic, it now, unfortunately, apologies from Fiorentina to Scottish football that result. But you know they were a hard team to break down. I would have defied a lot of sides to go to Pults and score a goal because they made football into a sport that nobody would want to watch for 90 minutes. So, but hopefully they can do the job in the return leg.
Yeah, and dipping down into Serie B, obviously big weekend again in terms of, you know, not many games left. It looks like Parma are going to wrap this up because they managed another victory against Spezia. Annoyingly, Como got the 2-1 win against Bari. I was looking at Como's remaining games, and on paper it doesn't look like there's many games that are going to be that tough to slip up in, but I just find that they'd be on a run of like 10 game winning run at the end of the season if they win every game from now, so you've got to think statistically that there must be a chance that they'll drop.
Have they got Südtirol left to play? They're the banana skins.
Yeah, exactly. I think they've got Cittadella, who's quite tough, and they've got Sampdoria on the last day of the season. So depending if Samp need something for the playoffs, then that could be a big game. So, Venezia, obviously not a great couple of weeks in terms of results, but got back to winning ways today. Brescia started off pretty well, I thought, but once we got the goal, Brescia had a lot of the ball, but we created so many more chances than them, especially in the second half. We really should have put it to bed. And there nearly was a comedy. Lezzarini, our old goalkeeper, plays for them, and he dropped the ball into his own net when coming to get But of course, he then went down claiming he'd been fouled or something, and the ref managed to give it as a foul. And I looked at the replay several times. I couldn't see anything, but I'm sure that's my Venezia, my Arancio Nero Verde glasses.
They're very multicoloured glasses.
Exactly. But I mean, so Cremonese look a bit dodgy. They lost to Ternana, and they've got Catanzaro next week, which is pretty much a direct, you know, they are direct rivals. So, but then we've got to play Cremonese, we've got to play Catanzaro after that. So, as I said last week, I suppose the priority has to be keep third or fourth place because that helps you in the playoffs. But we are only three points off Como, so I'm not entirely.
It's not done. Because the only other thing I was going to say is make sure you badly injure some of these you're playing. If you're playing all the teams you're likely to play in the playoffs, then send out that boy you don't like, number 99,
Olivieri,
give him a mission in the closing minutes.
I mean, he's carrying enough weight to do something.
to clobber whoever the player you fear most.
I did want to raise one thing. I saw a list posted this week of the richest owners in football, Italian football, and you know, it's got so interesting. Fiorentina Comiso is the second richest, $9 billion. Friedkin the third, $6.4 billion. The Saputos that own Bologna, the Berlusconis at Monza, but top by a not insignificant margin by about 40 billion or something like that. Forty miliardi or whatever is the owners of Como, and also in that top 10 is the owner of Cremonese.
Yeah.
So I was saying, when you, I mean, obviously, if we look at Fiorentina, that having a rich owner doesn't
No,
isn't
well,
in and of itself the answer, but it's a difficult thing to compete with when you're scraping around.
Definitely. I mean, it's, I think make more of a difference in Serie B, because by the time you get to Serie A, the teams are, and also there is a point where it doesn't matter how rich your owner is, because he can't actually spend that money on players anyway.
Yeah, that's
you know
true,
the
yeah.
financial fair play. That's been Comiso's, I mean, also his other argument is, I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to spend all my money on Fiorentina, which I think, you know, is absolutely fair. I think, you know, even a slice of that money would make a huge difference. But down in Serie B, I think then you are going to make, you know, gigantic yeah. difference there. As I say, you can't obviously, you know, you've got to do it within parameters that are allowed. But you can see, you can see at Como certainly yeah. just how, you know, how much money's going in and how ambitious they are. But I mean, it's not a bad thing for Italian football, but I get it. It's like, it reminds me of when Gretna came up through Scottish football, and well, it ended badly there. So it may end badly for Como and Cremonese, although they're slightly bigger towns or whatever.
I can only hope.
But it does skew things. So, you know, I mean, it's the same as we watch Wrexham kind of coming up through leagues.
Yeah.
You know, I think it does fans of other, it might be great, you know, it's a fairy tale for fans or you know, neutrals watching, think, oh, gee, ain't that great?
Yeah,
Como coming up, that's lovely. But you're thinking, oh, not bloody Como, the nouveau riche bastards that they are.
Exactly.
You know, why could he not have fallen in love with Venice?
Exactly. And then it's could picture. He... well, yeah, I have often wondered, you know, if Como is, you know, there's obviously a lot to sell Como. Their stadium's on the lake and it looks lovely and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot, you know, marketing-wise you can do there.
Mm-hmm.
They have tried to do that at Venice, of course, in terms of the Americans that have come in and the tried to market in a different way, and obviously the shirts and all that sort of stuff. So there is a bit of more of a brand, but it doesn't seem to be followed by the investment.
Is
the problem.
Yeah, that's what you want, is you want somebody wealthy and you want someone that's willing to spend their wealth as well. Really, that's the bottom line. And for the long term good as well, because it's no use. Otherwise you get the crash and burn. Like,
yes,
you know, Fiorentina's had that before, and you know, I don't think fans get frustrated because they're not spending £100 million on players, but the reality is they can't really, you know, and then you end up in that horrible position where if anything happens to your owner, or you know, it turns out they've been creative in their accounting, then you know, it can have big bad repercussions for the club. So anyway, we will be rooting for the economic underdog then in the playoff story. Don't be fooled by Como or Cremonese. It's plucky little Venezia that you want to be supporting on the run in.
Exactly. But yeah, we've gone on over our usual time talking about that. But yeah, we will be back next week with an update on just how that fight, the underdog fight, is going, and to see if Fiorentina did manage to bore their way past Poulsen.
If we can score a goal, if we can wake Poulsen from their slumber, we'll see. Could be a ding-dong battle. I mean, you've heard it here, really. That's twice. If you're betting Liverpool to win 4-0 and Poulsen Fiorentina to be about 6-5 in the return leg or something,
that's probably
what will happen.
On the betting thing, I did also bet on the National yesterday, and of course, my horse came second, not first, so there you go. Typical,
yep.
Gregorian curse.
That is it. That is our way. Never knowingly pick a winner.
Yeah. Okay, speak to you next week.
Bye, Marco.